સ્થાપકાય ચ ધર્મસ્ય સર્વધર્મ સ્વરૂપિણે અવતાર વરિષ્ઠાય રામકૃષ્ણાય તે નમઃ. Dear Swami Atmajnanandaji and dear friends, it is always a joy for me to come over here, and this time it is more so because I am seeing this new temple. I came here before the temple was there, and now with the temple, what a big change. And you all have your share in this great work. And one special thing about Washington, D.C. is that Swami Atmajnanandaji, with your help and cooperation, has built up a very nice system of remaining in constant awareness of spiritual life. Small classes. Today morning I just saw it was a class which is not publicized, but there are so many people, so he is getting many students in his classes. Very nice to see that even for reading the book The Eternal Companion, there were so many people. So it is very encouraging. And for the whole day he has set up programs, and all the works, they always remind us of the purpose of, spiritual purpose of life. So when Maharaj asked me to speak, I thought it would be just a satsang, so devotees can ask questions, and then, but then he said I should speak on some topic. Then it struck me that, well, all the scriptures speak of purification of the mind. For our spiritual progress, purity of mind is the thing which is needed. And in the Bible also it is said, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Similarly, Sri Ramakrishna gave stress on purity. Holy Mother's life itself was a saga of purity. That is why it is necessary that we try to purify our mind. And the ideal of Sri Ramakrishna is the greatest purifier. How to purify the mind? The scriptures, particularly the Yoga Sutra, emphasizes this thing that we have to fill the mind with good thoughts. Good thoughts means those thoughts which will not allow impurities to crop up in the mind. It is very difficult for us to remove impurities, but it may be easy for us to fill the mind with pure thoughts. Once Swami Jyoti Rupanandaji, who is in charge of our Moscow center in Russia, he asked Swami Bhuteshanandaji, Maharaj, how do we know that the mind has become pure? And Bhuteshanandaji Maharaj said, when no impure thought will arise in the mind, then you know the mind has become pure. So the Yoga Sutra also tells us how to purify the mind. Chitta vritti nirodhaha, that is the first instruction, that we have to remove all the impure thoughts from the mind. Then that is a kind of aggressive treatment. But then this Yoga Sutra itself has come up with 7 alternatives afterwards, because this is a very difficult path. Sri Krishna himself says in the Gita that to fight against the bad propensities, tendencies in the mind is really a very Herculean task. And those who try to go that way, they suffer more. Klesho dhikataraste sham. They suffer more. Because we are not prepared actually. If we look at the scenario in the Upanishadic period, we will see even in those days, the repetition of the same thought has been prescribed. So repetition is necessary. It is not very easy for us to get out of our bad habits. So those who try to go this way, means fighting with the tendencies, it is difficult for them because in an indirect way we get engaged with them. It is very bad actually. So to get out of the influence of those things, if we get engaged with them indirectly, then it is really difficult. So suppose I stand before a wall and start kicking the wall and try to increase the distance between me and the wall that way, it is not possible. The wall is not going to move. Rather, it is easy for me to move away from the wall. Sri Ramakrishna has said, as you proceed towards the east, your distance from the west will go on increasing. That is why Yoga Sutra comes up with 7 alternatives. And those 7 alternatives are nothing but filling the mind with good thoughts. When you look at the pranama mantra, you see there is a difference between our composition, English Sanskrit composition, and mantra. Mantra are those words or syllables which have been seen at a very inspired moment by great saints. They are called mantras. We may write beautiful compositions, but they won't be called mantras because they won't help others to get rid of these impurities of the mind. Manana trayate iti mantra. If we go on repeating those thoughts, then they help us to get rid of these impurities. So mantra we get, and if we don't know the meaning of those mantras, then they don't help much. Of course, it is sure that the words in the mantra, they have got tremendous power. But if we ourselves use our own endeavor, own efforts to hasten up the process, then we must know the meaning of the mantra. We must repeat the mantra consciously. So in the Vaishnava tradition they say, Guru Krishna Vaishnav Tiner Daya Holo Akir Daya Bine Jeev Chare Khare Galo. So everything is there. Guru is there, Krishna, the God is there, and Vaishnava, myself, I'm there, an aspirant. But the mind is not helping. So we ourselves should try to help the process. So it is always good to know the meaning of the mantra. That is one thing which always kept me engaged in, and finally it was very good. Sometimes the guru may say that you just go on repeating the mantra. The mantra, the meaning will reveal itself. That is true, of course. But initially we should know the meaning of the mantra. And the ideal of Sri Ramakrishna has a meaning. And this whole ideal has been encapsulated in this pranama mantra which Swami Vivekananda has written. Why should we follow Sri Ramakrishna? Actually speaking, the ideal of Sri Ramakrishna is the most purifying ideal, where there is no exclusion. Sri Ramakrishna's ideal does not exclude anyone. That means it is all-inclusive. We may remember this nice story when Sri Ramakrishna was a very small child. He was sent to the Vidyalayam school. Sri Ramakrishna hated learning arithmetic. Why? Because it teaches deduction, subtraction. He does not want to exclude anyone. If it is a creation of God, then God has created everyone. It's Nobody is excluded. In our religious traditions, in different religious traditions, if I am a follower of Krishna, I think those who are following Shiva, they are ignorant, they are misled. Similarly, Christians may think the Hindus are misled, Hindus may think Muslims are misled, like that. So, exclusion. And that way we limit the power of God. If I am a Hindu and I say my God has created the world and he has created only the Hindus, then the problem is, suppose there is 12% Hindus in the world, then who created the rest? It's a huge number of people. That God could be a bigger God and better God, maybe. So by definition, we reduce the power and unlimitedness of God. So Sri Ramakrishna's ideal includes everything. That is why it is the most purifying ideal. And if we know the meaning of Sri Ramakrishna's ideal, then we know why we follow Sri Ramakrishna. Then it is easy for us to purify the mind. Sometimes it is easy for us to purify for us to do body purification of the body. Very easy, you go and take a shower, etc. But it is very difficult to purify the mind. Body, okay, external things, you can just... But mind has got a lot of beautiful things in it. And they have got beautiful names. Like greed, delusion, jealousy, pride, anger, and these things. So they are our enemies, actually. So it is very difficult to purify the mind. So if we put these pure thoughts in that mind, then it helps us. Now, without going much into details, I would just take up the mantra itself, as Swami Vivekananda has said, Om Sthapakaya Cha Dharmasya Sarva Dharma Swarupini. He uses the word Swarupa. There are two words, Swarupa and Rupa. Rupa means the appearance. It appears like this. It may not be the real thing inside. It may be the face value. We may look very nice, or we know how to behave in a very polite manner. These are all mannerisms we have learned. But our inside story comes out when we react. Actions do not prove a person. Actually, reactions prove what comes out when we react. So therefore, the mind has to be purified and the nature has to be set to its original stature. That is the idea. That is the idea of purification. So Swarupa means the nature. In essence, in reality, who we are. Similarly, Sri Ramakrishna's Swarupa is like, not Rupa, not appearance. It is the nature of Sri Ramakrishna's ideal. So this is like a mantra. And he says, Sthapakaya cha dharmasya. This word Sthapakaya cha. Sthapana means to establish, to install, to found. Now, Sthapakaya cha dharmasya means Sri Ramakrishna came and established religion like that, if you make a literal meaning. But the literal meaning will not hold good in this respect. There are implied meanings in these mantras. Sthapakaya, as Sri Krishna says in the Gita, the dharma samsthapanarthaya. I come in every age when necessity arises to samsthapanaya, means to establish religion in a very firm footing, to re-establish, to rejuvenate. That is the idea. That is what Swami Vivekananda has said when in his My Master lecture, when he says that a kind of adjustment was necessary. Every time there arises a necessity for readjustment in the society, life of society, in culture, in religious practices, so another necessity for readjustment arose when Sri Ramakrishna was born. He says that. So it is a kind of readjustment, not that Sri Ramakrishna introduced a new religion or made something new. No, it is very traditional, but because of the long passage of time, the vitality of that religion has become very weak. Shankaracharya makes a very beautiful comment in his commentary when he comments on this, that sa kale niha mahata yogo nasta parantapa. Sri Krishna says, I am the original teacher. Imam vivasvati yogam proktavan aham avyayam. I am that original teacher who taught this yoga to Vivasva, means to sun god. And then in generation after generation, that has been handed down to the posterity. And then slowly, slowly, due to long passage of time, the vitality in this religion has become weak. Why it has become weak? Then Shankaracharya makes a beautiful comment. Wonderful it is. He says, because it has been practiced by those people, those are incompetent people, who had goals other than spiritual ones, who followed material goals, but they have been practicing this yoga. Therefore, this yoga lost its vitality. Similarly, when these many things are included in the system of religion, so when the religion by itself loses its vitality because of different reasons, then only it is necessary that the original teacher has to come down to readjust the thing, to reintroduce the same thing again. So, Svayavayam Maya Tedya Yoga Prokta Puratana, Sri Krishna says, the same yoga has been taught to you by me, by whom? I am that original teacher. I have come down to teach that one, and that same Puratana yoga, that old yoga is being taught. So, Sthapakayacha Dharmasya, Sri Ramakrishna did not introduce any new religion, but he readjusted, rejuvenated the religion, and then it became vibrant. That was the necessity. So Sthapakayacha Dharmasya, Swamiji tries to pack up that idea in these words. And dharma does not mean religion actually. Dharma means the basis of religions, the essence of religions, on which all religions are standing. Otherwise they will have no place to stand. So basis of religion, dharma, dhri means which upholds, which holds. So, sthapakayacha dharmasya. Then next one is sarva dharma swarupane. Here, Swami Vivekananda envisaged Sri Ramakrishna as the rejuvenator of religion. Not only one religion, but religions as such. So, dharma sansthapanarthaya. So here, Sarvadharma Swarupine, he is the embodiment of all religions. Actually speaking, it is Sri Ramakrishna who put religion on the basis of a science, as a science, because science demands rigorous experimentation. That's what Sri Ramakrishna has done about religion. Not only about Hindu religion, about realizing Mother Kali or realizing non-dual Brahman, but he has done extensive research, rigorous research on religious themes and different religions. So it is more scientific than science itself. So Sri Ramakrishna's approach is very, very modern and also very scientific. Therefore, he practiced all the religions in their essence. Religion has got different parts. One is that externals, the rituals, observances, feasting, fasting, all these things are called religion. But they are dependent on a particular culture or dependent on time. It is dependent on time. In the same culture itself, due to passage of time, things change. So they are not the essentials of religion. They are the outer coatings of religion. They will change according to the time and place. Like in India, if we go in South India particularly, where it is very hot, then we have to wash our feet time and again to enter the temple, and temples are also washed and cleaned like that. But here in not in Germany, what is this? In USA, in cold places, if you go on washing your feet, then you do not exist. You won't exist for a long time. So, system should be different. For practicing the same religious traditions, here we have to devise a new system, so cultures. So these are all outer coatings of religion. They are necessary. They are necessary because they save us from from making the religious ideals diluted. So these religious externals are necessary. Second is some dogmas, doctrines. These things are necessary, and they are the scriptures. Scriptures teach us. Scriptures, as Sri Ramakrishna has said, scriptures are like a mixture of sand and sugar. Scriptures have got a lot of things in them. It is not that all the things, whatever is taught in the scripture, are meant for one person only. No, that is the wrong thing. So when we read something, we think why it is written. We don't know. That is needed for somebody else. And also it is like that if you read the scriptures, particularly the Vedas and the Hindu traditions, then we will see that there is a fascinating study of the evolution of this religious spirit, how it evolved from the very primitive stage, how it evolved. Those things have been documented. And now, if we say they are not necessary, then we are wrong. As Swami Vivekananda has said, they were necessary, they were beneficial at one point of time, but at this moment we should not say that they are necessary. Suppose we say that surgery has advanced so much, and now if we compare surgery of today with the surgery which they used to do during the time of Charaka and others, I mean even the barbers used to do surgery. People will be pressing down somebody and then they will do surgery. We may look at those practices and call those people as butchers or murderers, but it was not like that. With that tremendous spirit, they started, and now surgery has taken this shape. So we should not ridicule those things, those systems. They were necessary, they were life-giving at that point of time. So scriptures record those things, so we should know that they are no more necessary. And if we hold on to those things to be sacrosanct, they should be followed as they are, then we are nothing more than primitive people. Some religions do practice those things to maintain their identity. There is a big crisis of identity between religions also. So because of the identity crisis, we try to hold on to these dogmas. But the essentials of religions, they are not contradictory. So Sri Ramakrishna discovered those things. And then third thing is that there is a prophet. Always in all religion, there is a prophet. And the prophets also behave according to the demand of that time. If in today's world, when we are following Sri Rama, and in today's world we go to the war front with the bow and arrow, it is no use like that. So the prophets' practices also, whatever they did, they may not have, actually speaking, they may not have efficacious meaning in today's world. But they have spoken something better, different. There is a nice story about Swami Ramakrishnananda. He told one of his disciples to bring something which was hanging at a higher level, so bring that thing down. Then this brahmachari said, how can I do that? Then there was a trunk in those days. They used to have the steel trunk, which had the clothes and other things of Swami Ramakrishnanandaji. Ramakrishnanandaji told, you just climb on that trunk, and from there you can bring it down. Then the brahmachari got scared. How can I do that? This trunk contains your clothes and other things. Then Swamiji said, I am telling you, you just get up on that and then bring it down. He was still hesitating. Then Ramakrishnanandaji made a nice comment. He said, in course of time, you people will worship our clothes, but you will not listen to our words. So it is like that. We will be worshipping the avatars, the prophets. And what they did, Sri Krishna was playing with the flute, and Sri Rama with the bow and arrow, all these things are not to be followed. We should follow what they said. And what is necessary, what is universal, what purifies our mind. So, Sri Ramakrishna tried to resolve the conflicts between religions. Actually speaking, the duty of religious people is to convince non-religious people, means atheists, agnostics like that, or materialists. These are the people, religious people should approach them and try to sit with them and convince them about the benefit of religion and such things. But instead of doing that, what we are doing, we are fighting with other people who are following other types of gods. They are also religious people, but we are fighting with them because they are termed as non-believers, kafirs, like that. Actually, non-believer means those who do not believe in God, they are non-believers. So we should talk with them and try to convince them about the benefit of religion by our own practices. That is what Sri Ramakrishna did. He put religion on the strongest basis, and that basis is practice. If we practice, then all these theoretical struggles and disagreements will not be there. That is the idea. So Sri Ramakrishna practiced all religions, and he reached the same goal. And then only he said that all the religions are true if we sincerely follow religion for our liberation. Then only they are true, otherwise not. If we follow religion to fight among ourselves, then that is no religion at all. So Sri Ramakrishna, in today's world, we see particularly in USA, in Germany it is not that much, in UK it is also rampant, that the interreligious or interfaith, they call it, interfaith conferences. Even government, they also give grants for holding interreligious conferences. What do we do in the name of interfaith? See, on the dais, all these great people will be sitting and they will be speaking very universal ideas. That is a nice thing. Everyone speaks about that. But there is no practice about it. Practice is that if these people can speak those words to their own congregation, then only it is beneficial. Otherwise, it don't work. We can go and speak big words, but in our practices, if we are conservative, if we are dogmatic and parochial, with parochial outlook, it does not help. That is why, in spite of all the efforts and our spending money for this interreligious or interfaith understanding, we are not getting enough benefit. All sorts of problems happening in the name of religion. Because we are reluctant to speak those universal ideas to our own congregation, and we also do not practice. And it may be true, and in many cases it is really true, that those who are upholders of religion in today's world, claim to be the upholders of religion, they have got different goals than spiritual. This is very dangerous. That is why sakale niha mahata yoga nasta parantapa. That is why instead of augmenting the spirit of religion, what we are doing, we are creating confusion. And then because of this, many, many great minds are turning away from religion. They're going out of religious orbits. They're becoming atheists. Great minds are becoming atheists because of this problem. I was listening to one YouTube video where Richard Dawkins was asked a question by a person. It was in Australia. He had a face-off with the religious people. And then someone asked, is it good to tell children that there is no God? Then he reacted in a very beautiful way. He said, it is always good to tell children what is truth. And he said, stuffing the mind of small children with dogmatic ideas is nothing but child abuse. These are true, actually. And these are great minds. They have great respect for religion. They say, we are also truth seekers. Only thing that we don't call this truth God. But we are truth seekers. They are seeking the truth. They are very honest people. They say, we don't know whether it is God or truth or something, consciousness, we don't know. But we are truth seekers. So we should teach truth to children. And that should start from home and from the schools and from the churches also. Because, as Swami Vivekananda has said, that purity, holiness, and charity, these are not exclusive possessions of any church, means any religion, in the earth. He said, purity, holiness, and charity, these are not exclusive possessions of any church on this world. So therefore, each and every system has produced men and women of exalted character, he has said. Each religion has the vitality to save us. But if we do not practice them, then there is the problem. So Sri Ramakrishna is Sarvadharma Swarupa because he practiced all religions and also put religion on the strongest basis of practicality. Actually speaking, religion is more practical than science because it creates the positive attitude in the mind of people which help the science to be not a destroyer but a benefactor of humanity. So the who is the question? Who would be using science? If I am misguided, if I am not pure mentally, then I will misuse the benefits of science. Therefore, religion is the savior. And then Swami Vivekananda has said, Avatara Varishtha. It is not that he is becoming very dogmatic or very, because Sri Ramakrishna is his guru, so he has to praise him. No, not that. He says Avatara Varishtha. Varishtha word means the most varaniya, means most adorable. That is the thing. Because in today's world, when we are facing multifaceted problems, then it is necessary that we should have a solution for all of this together. Not that we can treat a disease in a piecemeal. One part of the body should be cured, but the rest of it will be left alone. It is not like that. So, a total solution is presented, and that is presented by Sri Ramakrishna. Actually speaking, it may look to be more, means a kind of narrow outlook, as Sri Ramakrishna used to say, matuar buddhi, means being supportive of one moth or one religion only. But it is true that I should use this word only, though it is not the to the liking of Swami Vivekananda, that only, if we follow the ideal of Sri Ramakrishna only, then we can go to a church, to a mosque, to a gurdwara, to Sri Krishna's temple, to Shiva's temple, only if we follow Sri Ramakrishna. Sri Ramakrishna hated this word only. But, well, we should say, if we do not follow Sri Ramakrishna, it is not possible. It is not possible. Just follow any other system. You will be first barred to accept that others are true. That is the first condition, and that maintains their identity. That is what we think. We think that our identity is maintained by that. Actually speaking, the idea of religious or interfaith, we say that it is religious plurality. Actually, it is not. Religious plurality is not being practiced. What we are practicing religious relativism. I'll give you an example. One of our very scholarly Swamis has discussed this point very thoroughly. The idea is that, what is the idea of relativity? The idea of relativity is that everything in this world is relative. Whatever is time-bound is relative. Well, that may seem to be like that, but it is not true. In relativity, there is one thing constant, and that is the speed of light. You have to accept that, otherwise relativity is not possible. So, here also, we accept that to maintain our identity, we should not compromise with these ideas that others are true. That we cannot accept. So, we should stick to the outer coatings of religion, because that speaks of who we are. If I am a Muslim, I should show that I am a Muslim by my practices. What practices? Practices of fasts, feasts, etc. But they are not religion, actually. They are some practices, they help us. But we think they are our identity, so we stick to that. And they are constant. Everything has to be relative to this constant. All other things, even essential things, are relative. Well, that they are relative, but this is constant. And that is why it is called religious relativism. That is why we can't teach universal ideas to our own congregation. That is the problem. So, religious pluralism is not the idea for which we hold interfaith conferences or meetings. The idea is that religious relativism. So, Sri Ramakrishna, that is why Sri Ramakrishna said that we need to respect each other. And Swami Vivekananda used this word acceptance. He hated the word tolerance. The other day I read somewhere, some people advertised, publicized this phrase, that universal tolerance. Well, this is something very funny. Universal tolerance means what? I have universal tolerance means I tolerate everyone. I am the best, I am the most chosen, and you people are there, I tolerate you. Somehow I don't approve of your existence, but I tolerate you. Well, for practical reasons, I need your help. Okay, I tolerate you. This is a kind of attitude Swami Vivekananda hated very much. He said, tolerance is not the word. He said, acceptance. Instead of tolerance, try to practice acceptance. When Jesus has said, love thy neighbor as thyself, he did not say that, love thy Christian neighbor as thyself. He said, love thy neighbor as thyself. As you love yourself, love thy neighbor as thyself. It is like that. It is as universal as that. So everyone has the right to live in the creation and live in this world. In the Charter of Human Rights, it is said, every human being has the right to life. Well, but if you deprive somebody else of his or her right to live, to life, then you lose that right. You lose that right. So similarly, everyone has right, and everyone has equal right. That is why Hillary Clinton here, she once remarked, human rights are also women's rights. Women's right. Human rights are women's rights. So that is the lamentation, that is the grudge we have, because we are not practicing it. We are not giving equal respect, equal right to everyone. So acceptance has to be there, otherwise it is not possible for us to remove these problems in the society. So these are ideas, broad-based ideas, which should be put into our mind. Our mind should be filled with these ideas so that we get purified. The mind inside becomes purified. Then blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Then only it is possible. Christ uses this beautiful sentence, but he uses the word, they shall see God. If we purify our heart, do we see? We need eyes to see, not the heart to see. But he uses that. It is, as Sri Ramakrishna said, that one can see God with open eyes. The meaning is that, not that you open the eyes and God can be seen. Sri Ramakrishna says, if I close the eyes, I see God. Can't we see God if I open the eyes? The meaning is that God is everywhere. But Christ says, with the eyes, eyes means, as we can see things very clearly and become convinced about its existence, similarly, we will purify the heart and God will reflect there, will reside there, and it will be as vivid as that, as convincing as that. That is the idea of seeing. So then only the mind will be purified when the ideas are pure. Otherwise, it is not possible. So Avatara Varishtha means he is the avatara for this age, because his solution is all-embracing. His solution is a solution which leaves no stone unturned. Everything will be taken care of if Sri Ramakrishna's ideal is followed. Avatara Varishthaya Ramakrishnayate Namaha. We know Rama is the name of an earlier avatar. Actually, in Sanskrit, the word Rama means that which gives pleasure, enjoyment, joy. As we know, the joy is just a mental thing, but bliss, the Rama word means bliss. So at a physical level, if we get happiness at this physical level, that is called pleasure. At the mental level, that is called joy, and spiritual level, that is called bliss. So Rama means bliss. And Krishna means Krishna who removes or pulls out all the sins or all the impurities from our mind. He is Krishna. So Ramakrishna, actually speaking, this stand, these two ideals stand for two different things. As Sri Ramakrishna has said that lust and wealth. So Kama Kanchana or Kamini Kanchana, lust and wealth. So Ramayana stands for the vices when we have lust. And Mahabharata stands for the vices when we have desire for wealth. So these are the two things represented in the two epics. And these two ideals have been joined in the life of Sri Ramakrishna. And for our good fortune, Sri Ramakrishna bore the name Ramakrishna. So Ramakrishna, two ideals have been manifesting in the life of Sri Ramakrishna. That is why for this age, these are the two most explosive and dangerous emotions one can have. And we do have these emotions. And these are the things which we have to remove. That is why Sri Ramakrishna's ideal is better, because as Holy Mother has said, that Sri Ramakrishna's ideal was renunciation. Renunciation of what? If we have anything, then we have to renounce. And what do we have? We have these two things in enough quantity in us. Lust and desire for wealth. So these two things we have to renounce. And then only we will be able to follow the ideal of Sri Ramakrishna. So it is a great name that we have for our benefit. For this age, Sri Ramakrishna is the savior, because his ideal is all-inclusive, and it is a great ideal which takes care of all the problems in our spiritual life. That is the thing we should dwell on, that, and more ideas will come if we read the life of Sri Ramakrishna. It is a really very fascinating meditation. There are different type of dhyanas. Leela dhyana is one kind of meditation. If we read the life of Sri Ramakrishna, that is a great Leela dhyana. Then it purifies the mind. It fills the mind with the great thoughts, great ideals. So it is necessary that we are happy and we are fortunate that we have come into the orbit of Sri Ramakrishna's ideal, and we have him as our ideal in front of us. We should be serious about that. With a small anecdote from the life of Swami Bhuteshanandaji, I will end my talk. And it is so interesting, so encouraging. I was just a young brahmachari, and from that time it encouraged me so much. There are some such incidents, but it was one of the very great incidents. That once there was a problem in the ashrama in Kakulgachi, then Bhuteshanandaji Maharaj, after his stroll around the pond there, then I was with him and we were returning to his room. Then he met the manager Swamiji there, and then he asked the manager Swamiji, there was a problem which was disturbing Bhuteshanandaji also. He said, what will happen finally? What do you think? Then manager Swamiji says, whatever this old man, this bearded man desires, that will happen. He uses this budo, the Dadi Baba, like that. Immediately, I can't never forget that scene. Bhuteshanandaji turned like just he was bitten by a snake or something like that. He turned like that and said, what do you say? Don't speak these words again. He won't be that strong or that rude any time, but it hit him like anything, and he just turned and he said, what did you say? Don't speak these words again. Then afterwards, I felt very bad. What did he say? He did not say anything wrong, actually. We have also heard people refer to Sri Ramakrishna as Budo Baba, Dadi Baba, like that. Now suddenly something happened. What happened? And then after, I did not dare to ask him this question that day itself. But after some days, then I had some occasion, and he was in good mood, so I asked, why Maharaj, why did you react that way? Then he looked at me and he became very serious. He said, at least at one place you should be serious. You people are not never serious. at least about your ideal, about your Ishta, you should be serious. Do not speak these loose words about him. Do not make it diluted. So at one place you should be serious, and it is when we are speaking about Sri Ramakrishna, we should be serious. That it is really a great fortune that we have come into his, means into his ideas, and it is really, I don't know if it is true, but I feel that should be true, that it is he who has chosen us. I remember one incident when we were in the training center. Swami Buddhananda ji, he was one of our great Swamis. So he was speaking to us. Then one of our brahmacharis asked, Maharaj, what is the proof that Sri Ramakrishna has accepted us? What is the proof? His eyes glow and his whole face became something different. And so serious, he looked at the brahmacharya and looked at the whole class and said, that the very fact, brother, that you are here proves that you have been chosen. This we must accept. Otherwise it is not possible. Holy Mother has said, Tar Kripa Hule Hai. When you come under his grace, then only it is possible, otherwise not. That is a great gift in this life. It is not to be trifled away. So thank you very much. Jai Sri Ramakrishna.